I've got Soren in the house. He's going to talk with us about his career, a rather successful composer, musician, performer. And then I've got Steve Bamer in the second hour. He's the executive director for Leading Age Florida, talking about the care of seniors. It's a hot topic these days, so you don't want to miss any of this stuff. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
Together again, are we not, by virtue of the magic of radio? And people continue to ask me this, you know, is radio still really a thing? Well, let me tell you, there's 36 commercial radio stations just in the Tallahassee market. I mean, so that's, you know, the Tallahassee metro area, right? Five counties. So there's plenty of operation out there, plenty of audience. And if you take the top 10 radio stations in Tallahassee, the Tallahassee-Thomasville market, well, they're cuming a cumulative audience weekly, about 15,000 people on average. Some, of course, bigger, some smaller. But that's a lot of folks, and I think that radio, for its part, succeeds in spite of the increase in the number of various media and media outlets. In spite of all of that, the format, or that is to say the technology, radio, both broadcast and now internet radio, streaming radio, continues in some respects, I think, because it's more intrusive, if you want to say. It's more a companion, and it's, more, for the most part, lifestyle-oriented, more so than other mass media, we might say. Okay, so TV and print, you know, magazines and newspapers and such, I mean, they all have a kind of leaning. But if you listen to a radio station, or if you're a fan of a local radio show like this one, well, because it kind of relates to who you are, more likely. It's, you know, it's got stuff going on that you particularly identify with, I think. And that's something that record companies realized, you know, decades ago. Especially with the advent of FM and the higher fidelity that FM was able to deliver. And so you had record companies saying, well, we're going to take all of our country and we'll put it over here, and all of our rock and put it over there, and all of our adult contemporary goes over here. And of course, there was the top 40, and, you know, on it goes in these various formats, music formats. So we are a talk show, and talk radio largely has come about in the last maybe 20, 25, 30 years with greater profundity and greater availability. Well, here we are with our own intentions, this radio show that you've made part of your day, with very clear objectives, and that is to celebrate all that Tallahassee was, is, and more importantly, can be. And we are who we are because of each other. And that's a discovery, isn't it? That is all of us coming to a better appreciation of what we offer. And, you know, and I can preach at you on that all day long. I mean, I tend to do that. I get preachy with you. But I really want to underscore this idea that in a community like Tallahassee that is open to ideas, open to change, open to innovation, well, it has the capacity then for sustainability. I always think of a body of water, you know, the Great Salt Lake. Yeah, there's only a few very, very select creatures that can live in that body of water. And if you've never tried to swim in the Great Salt Lake, I have. Yeah, you float to the top. It's like you're almost floating above the water because the salt density. So it is with the Dead Sea in the Middle East, right? And what makes a body of water like that? Why is it that it does not support life in great abundance anyway? Well, the salinity of the water is a result of the fact that it's sort of landlocked. It's got stuff coming in. It's got water feeding that body of water, you know, so there's an intake, but there's no outlet. There's no way in which that can be refreshed. Okay, so there's my metaphor of the morning or afternoon, depending on when you're listening to me. That relates to what I think constitutes a healthy social system. A healthy community is one in which ideas are exchanged. You know, there's stuff coming in and stuff going out. And if you think about that, any living organism has stuff coming in and stuff going out. And when either of those two things stop or are restricted in some fashion, well, then that organism isn't going to survive, or is certainly not going to be very healthy. Right. So what I'm advocating here is that we remain an open system, an open community, considering all the ideas that are brought to us, whether it's in education or science or politics, government, recreation, entertainment. I mean, come on, the arts. All that we bring to the world, engineering, technology, yeah, economics, business, the role of government, how about social services, how about nonprofit service providers, charitable groups, all of that that comprises the maze of, the tapestry of, this interwoven community. We've been accused of being highly segregated and that these various subsystems and parts of our community just don't relate well to each other. Well, we're here to say nuts to that. And if we're doing anything right around here, it's the idea that we don't care what part of the county, city you come from, or the region for that matter. And we really don't care how you part your hair or, you know, what you consider sacred or patriotic, because it all is part of who we are. And the real key is, again, are we listening? Are we incorporating? Are we taking into account what that amounts to? So we have with us in this first hour, Sorn, who is a musician, composer, performer, originally from Tallahassee, my oldest son, who now resides in Los Angeles. We talked with him at length some time ago about that whole business of incorporating ideas in his creative enterprise and what that means to an artist, a musician, what it means to take into account what's in front of you as well as what may be inside of you, what inspires you. So stay with me for more of this Here Fine Radio Show. I got Soren coming up. Steve Bamer will be with me in the second hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom. Conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
It is our custom here with this Here Fine Radio Show to bring you local musicians. It's just a thing we do because we just love them so much, and that we love what they do. They love us, and I think they love all of us who are those who find in their music a unique sound, a particular perspective. Some of them are no longer residing with us, and we have today, for your listening pleasure, Soren, who has made his annual trek back to his home ground. So you are a native, sir, and let us welcome you to the show. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you back. And it's certainly, it must be a very interesting process for you for this reason, having grown up in a small southern town, I would say, average beginnings. Here in your early 30s now, having traveled about a good deal, you and Danny Bedrosian are in some kind of a rivalry for how many airports you can visit inside of a month. Your recent activity included a stop in Berlin, and that in and of itself was particularly unique because of this whole business with this sound system. Tell us about the whole motivation there.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that it started in a small pond because I think it allowed for that foundation to be built. And here, you know, 15 years into that journey, I caught the attention of the folks over at Dolby, which most people recognize for their work in movies.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, so they've had
the
this...
The Dolby. That's like saying Sony.
Right. You guys heard of Sony? Yeah, so they developed this system called Atmos a few years ago, and it's all about spatializing audio in movie theaters. And their most recent endeavor, which they are just now kind of prototyping and working the kinks out of, is this application for musicians and producers. So that live, you can spatialize over the course of 14 speaker points the, you know, the session or the whatever you're doing. So it's a program that works with any music software, with any DAW. And so they heard my work and they were like, "Hey, we'd love to try to work on using this."
So if I'm standing in the middle of those 14 points of reference, it's a kind of 360 presentation.
Yeah, exactly. And so in, they showed me some demos of it at their space in Burbank, in Los Angeles County. It's pretty amazing. And they can program it so that each one of those instruments, you know, can be at any place in the room. And it also helps with the frequency of sound, too. So you can do your lower frequency stuff low, physically low in the room. You can, you know, the potential is really endless.
Because you're able to create, I guess you'd say, more texture, more...
Yeah, you're literally creating a sonic landscape for the listener. And then with my work, because I like layering my voice,
right,
it's exciting. For years, I've dreamt of this idea that I could fill the room with all of these separate voices all harmonizing together
at the same time.
And so we got to premiere that in Berlin. It was really a rough go where we just did a left-right send, which, if for those of you who aren't familiar with sound stuff, just the usually you have a left and a right going out to a stereo mix. And in this case, we sent that to these 14 speakers. So it still was cool, but just scratching the surface of what it could be.
That's remarkable. So an opportunity to experience this technology firsthand, your music being the contribution there.
Yes.
And you had an opportunity to perform then for an audience of folks in Berlin.
Yeah, and it's funny because it was the earliest show I think I've ever played. And I say that, you know, knowing that I've done sets at 2 a.m., you know, 3, 4 in the morning. But in terms of waking up and going and performing in a day's time, 11 a.m. is unheard of in the music business. However, you know, the place was packed. And the venue itself has got a great story. It was built in the 70s as a broadcast complex for... the state at that time, and they were doing propaganda. And since then, after the fall of the wall in the 80s, it's become this recording academy and a music summit for all kinds of people in the business. So for all of us there, it was really a special...
How cool is that?
A special experience.
Kind of a congress, a convention of like-minded people.
Yeah.
Some performers, some just listeners of and lovers of.
Yeah. Very cool group of people.
Wow. And my understanding is you actually have to apply to be a part of this, and then once accepted, then you can buy a ticket.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a cool thing because what it did was weed out anyone who was just sort of...
frivolous, we'd say.
You know?
Yeah.
And those who were there, it was more like a university environment where you had musicians, enthusiasts, producers, etc., really there because they were interested in connecting on a deeper level. So for me, it was a privilege because I got to meet people who had traveled from all over the world just to see me specifically, which felt really flattering.
That's pretty cool. I remember you telling me this one guy was trying to get in.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us that story.
So the things that I offered was the live performance, a vocal workshop, and a listening session where I listen to other people's work and we talk about it.
I see.
So for the vocal workshop, it was essentially full at capacity immediately. And when I got to the room where it was being held, there was a line around the corner. And as the moderator for the room is trying to shut the door, I hear this guy like, "Please, I am a singer. I must be in that room." And all of us that were sitting there in the circle were just like, "Whoa!" And this, you know, this moderator graciously was like, "I'm really sorry, it's at capacity." So we all gave him a warm round of applause in the way he handled the whole thing, but it was pretty funny.
So the guy never did get to be a part of that.
He didn't get in.
Oh man!
Yeah. But I admired his enthusiasm for sure.
In your role as an educator there, this workshop is an opportunity for you then to invest further in other people and their own craft, I guess you'd say, right?
You know, and that came really almost by accident. It was this thing of people just coming to me and asking me, "What does it take?
What does it take? What do we have to do?" Folks, we're talking to Soren. We're going to continue this conversation here in just a moment, and we got some music that he's going to share with us. You stay with me. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
December 1, 1955, Montgomery, Alabama. A 42-year-old African-American woman stands waiting for her bus ride home. The first bus was standing room only, so she decided to wait. Then, a second bus. As she took her seat in the designated colored section, the bus continued until the white section was filled, and the driver ordered her and three others to give up their seats to make room for white passengers. The three complied, but she did not. When asked later why she refused to give up, she said, "I would have to know, for once and for all, what rights I had as a human being and a citizen." The woman was Rosa Parks, whose one simple act of conviction sparked the Montgomery bus boycott, helping to advance the civil rights movement for all Americans.
Celebrating our nation's quest for freedom, Witten Glass on South Monroe for mirrors, shower enclosures, and window glass, called 222-5781. And Sellers Tile on Capitol Circle Northeast for tile, carpet, hardwood, and luxury vinyl, call 656-8453.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Sorn. It is the time of year when various migratory birds make their way.
Here I have come flocking.
Sorn is back on some much-needed rest, I think, after a pretty arduous schedule of travel and performances. We talked about Berlin and how remarkable that whole thing was in a number of levels. But you've also played a number of festivals since we saw you last. And you had this art show that you did in Houston at a gallery there.
Yeah.
So some of you may or may not know, I guess, but some of you may not know that in addition to his musical talents, Sorn is also known for his visual art. And as a creator in that arena, has been acclaimed. He was, I think, twice selected as the best damn little artist in Texas or something. I forget what the designation was.
That was the actual title for the accolade.
I think it was
the best damn little artist in Texas. Gee, thanks, guys.
Art Magazine, if I'm not mistaken, or Art Journal, one of those.
Yeah, Art in America.
And they said that you were good.
They acknowledged my
we
work.
We all need third-party validation,
especially
in this business.
It helps.
So you do this gallery show in Houston. Tell us a little bit about that.
So that's an old relationship I've had with a gallery there now since 2009, which is hard to believe. But he called me up earlier this year and said, "Hey, would you like to have a show in November?" Yes, I would. And I'd been developing a body of work that explored the relationship between visual line and sonic line, or sound. And the translation of that is I sing and draw at the same time. Mm. And I'll create these improvised vocal pieces along with visual works that all come from a developed personal visual vocabulary of shapes and symbols and things that look almost
stuff
like
stuff that you came up with, basically.
You know, distilling it from inspirations from everything from like Veve drawings in Haiti to Sen mandalas you'd see Tibetan Buddhist monks creating. Just the idea of creating one's own personal language. And I think that's a key element there, is that especially at this time, it feels really important for one to just be true to themselves. Mm.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of this. Now, this is the live recording you brought back from Berlin, and I think the song is entitled
Humble Hands.
Humble Hands. So, Carl, let's do that. Take a listen. Humble Hands, Sorn.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio. And you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Well, my friend, we've just a few more minutes before we close out here this radio show. We call Tallahassee Talks. We've had a lovely conversation with Soren and all of the doings of his most recent concerts and shows and composition. You've turned out 6 records. You've been doing this since you were, 5 years old, it feels like. The last 20 years have been remarkably prolific. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I've always appreciated about you mostly is your prolific performance and just a lot of work, both visually and audibly, and the tenacity. I mean, you just seem to be relentless. It's like you're in a race with yourself to see if you can get all this done. And in the process, telling us a story. So what's next? You've got House of Stone finally now completed, those 5 characters that are becoming even more popular as people begin to embrace this body of work. It's amazing, I should say. And kudos to you for having turned that out, because
thank you.
Folks, if you have not done this for yourself, you really need to go to his website. Go to Soren.com. Wouldn't it be the best thing? Or maybe SoundCloud or whatever. Go to Soren.com. That's a good place to start. Just immerse yourself in this music and in the art and find out what it really is all about, at least at that surface level, and then give yourself a chance to begin to try to absorb it all, because it is mammoth. So, having said that, you're back at it, and you've got a whole new chapter, we'll say, of your life and of your career that's beginning to form.
Yeah, the next thing is a body of work that I'm going to release as a book with music as the companion. The book is a journal that I've been keeping for the last few years. It's black paper with silver ink and gold ink. And it's a lot of the internal investigation, sort of like what Carl Jung did with the Red Book throughout his life. It was inspired by that in part. And so the result of this is a series of musical pieces that will all be vocal. And then that will be accompanied and produced and presented by way of things like VR and the virtual reality. So you'll be able to put on a headset and be in these different environments where there's a play happening around you. And I'm creating the music spatially, so you'll hear it in a 360 environment.
Wow.
Courtesy of the Atmos software.
Right.
And that work itself will follow a loose narrative. And right now the working title is Spiritus for this album.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a sampling of this work that you're talking about. So Spiritus, we'll stick with that for the moment. But this is the latest from Soren.
Thank you.
marvelous work. The artist, Sorn, who has graciously been a part of this broadcast of Tallahassee Talks on this part of the year when the holidays time is here, and Sorn makes his return trip to his boyhood home. A pleasure having you with us again, my friend.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
I mean, and you continue to astound us with this level of challenge. And I would say this too for you, my friend, those of you who are just getting to know this artist and his work, take all of your blinders off, put all of your answers aside, and allow the music and the art to help you begin asking questions, because that's what it really does for me. I think most of all, it's about us thinking critically and asking questions of ourselves, of one another, and the world in which we live. I'm going to say to my good friend, my admired and admiring son, Morgan, thank you for all that you give back to this community and to the world of art and music. We're going to keep an eye on you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. So there we have a conversation with Sorn from a couple of years back, telling us more about his own career and the work involved with being a contributive musician and artist of any kind. I hope you've enjoyed that, and I hope you'll stay with me as we get through the top of the hour here. We've got the second hour of Tallahassee Talks coming up with Steve Bamer. Stay with me.
In 1945, Jack Whiddon started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whiddon Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whiddon because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whiddon Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whiddon wanted, and it's been the Whiddon way of doing business for over 70 years. Whiddon Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whiddon Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whiddenglass.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny on your favorite radio station. Just pick one, 93.3 FM in Tallahassee. Real Talk over there on the other side of town. John Jopling and all of his team. Good job, folks. You guys are awesome. And our own beloved Moose Magnificat, Tallahassee's only all-local, all-original, all-the-time radio station. Yeah. So if you like Drew Tillman or the New 76ers or Jerry Thigpen, Sarah Mack, well, they're all here. They're all on Moose. Hundreds of local artists that have made it our pleasure to present to you their fine music. And we are pretty open-minded about everybody that will send us tunes. Try not to say no to anybody. And so if you are a musician and you want to share your original songs, that can't be cover songs, we're looking for original tunes, well, send them on over. And you can do that if you go to moosemagnificat.com, the website. And of course, if you're simply a fan of the station, well, you know that's where you go to listen, or you can download the app. Moose Magnificat app is on Apple and on Android, so Google Play or the Apple Store, right? I'm not an Apple guy, so I don't know what they call it. Is that right, Carl? Apple Store? I think so. Yeah, okay. Carl says yes. So you can get it either way, and then again, we're on TuneIn and Radio Garden and Streama. You can even go to Alexa and say, "Hey, Alexa, play Moose Magnificat," something like that. All of that instruction for you, by the way, don't trust me, is at the website, moosemagnificat.com.
www.tallahasseetalks.com. Now in our, let's see, we've been on here 5 years. Wow. And all kinds of neat stuff coming up. And the station continues to grow and our listenership grows, reaching people around the world. That's why we call it the Sound of Tallahassee or Tallahassee's Radio to the World. We're out there on that world stage, and it's fun to see listeners from various parts of the world, Australia and Germany and the Middle East. One young fella emailed us to say that he had found us. I think he said he was 17 years old. Found us online, and he lives in Ireland. I want to say it wasn't Dublin, but it was Ireland, okay? It's a country, and I'm sure that they have more than one town, but I'm just not very bright, so Dublin is the only one that comes to mind. In any case, he was laudatory in his comments about the station, so fun for us. And reached back out to him. And you know what we're going to do this year, Carl? We're going to do this. We're going to have some stuff to give away, right? We should have some merch. Is that what they call it? Merchandise. Merch. Cups and mugs and stickers and all that good stuff. T-shirts. Should do that. Yeah. So when people, you know, send us a thank you or send us their music, we can send them something. Do you think that's a good idea? I think that's a good idea. Carl likes that idea. Okay. Well, anyway, folks, in the conversation that we're going to be listening to with Steve Bamer, let me tell you, if you don't know, he is the executive director for Leading Age Florida. Leading Age meaning seniors who lead the way. You know, they're the folks who have already blazed the trails in many cases. And in that senior population, they're faced with some formidable concern and circumstances that oftentimes not only bewilder them, but their families. I mean, it becomes problematic when the level of expectation for service and the care, the medical care and the social activities and all the technologies that they're used to having around them, fall to the providers in these senior care facilities. And I mean, some of those facilities, of course, are more intent on the medical care of the individual. So there are those facilities that I think are referred to as managed care, medical care that accommodates the particular needs of a given resident. And in those situations, of course, costs are staggering. Well, so then it is up to the, you know, the provider of those services in that facility, God bless them, to figure out how to bring all of that level of quality, proficiency, availability into and as part of the services that they provide, so that these residents then can, you know, as much as we can expect, enjoy their senior years. Well, it's the job of Leading Age Florida as an organization to provide support to these facilities around the state. And they do so in spades. I mean, they are very, very good at what they do. Steve Bamer is a gift to that organization, and frankly, to all of those care facilities that are members of Leading Age Florida. So it's always good to have him with us. And this is a conversation, actually, that we had a bit, I guess it was about a year or two ago. His remarks are quite timely. And so you're going to hear in this conversation a lot of the kinds of things that have come to bear even in the last 2 years, 3 years, are things that he was talking about then. I mean, he put the fear of God in all of us because he's talking at length about what he could see coming down the path, what was on the horizon, what this, you know, contradiction in resource and expectation and funding, you know, we're going to bring about a kind of a real kind of crisis. Now, these days, in this pandemic environment, I guess I can't say post-pandemic entirely, but certainly in the last year and few months, we've seen, situations that break your heart are just absolutely staggering in terms of the lack of ability for a lot of these facilities around the country to deal with what they were faced with. And I mean, that isn't an indictment. That's just a statement of fact. Now, there are some, apparently, particularly in the state of New York, that have a lot of other issues that they're going to have to deal with. And the governor there has got a lot of splaining to do. But for the moment, we'll leave that conversation aside and really just focus on what it is that Florida, and particularly this organization, is doing to better care for, better provide for residents in these facilities. And by the way, my friend, if you may be, you and I may soon be one of those residents. I mean, I don't know how old you are. I'll be 66 in May. Thank you very much. You know, and my family's looking at me like, has anybody checked Pops lately? Has he taken his meds this morning? So, I mean, you know, life is that way. And when we anticipate the future, we have to stop and think, where will I be? What will I be doing? And who will care? Well, if nobody else cares, you know that I do. You stay with me.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
You and I have probably said this ourselves. We've certainly heard it said over the last several decades that America is getting older, that we are at a time in our history when the population will say over 50. We're hanging in there. So all of the advancements in medical science, our lifestyle, even the ways in which we make our living, all of that has reduced the mortality of the members of our population that find themselves on the senior side. So for those of us, and I'll place myself there squarely on that side of the question, who find themselves so benefited, we're delighted that life is that way for us. And at the same time, it presents the rest of the country, really all of us, with some significant questions about how we care for that aging population. You know, it's not a new topic by any stretch, but there are some new wrinkles to that, and a lot of that having to do with good old policy decisions, policy positions that oftentimes have some political implications or are directed by a perspective, you know, that we often refer to as politics. I mean, and that's not being fair to the fact that political concerns can include all kinds of influences. Sometimes they're strictly a matter of economics. It's a matter of whose money is involved. and how much money is involved. And so you have those concerns that are advocating for a particular point of view, we'll say, or a set of policy positions. In that context, I want to talk with Steve Boehmer, who, for his part, has spent a lot of his days, a lot of his time, spends a lot of his energy trying to figure out that stuff while he is representing those organizations within the state of Florida, particularly, that are in that managed care business. And so the organization is Leading Age Florida, and the executive director, Steve Boehmer, is our guest this morning. How are you, Steve?
I'm well. Good morning. Thanks
Welcome
for having
back.
Me.
Welcome back. Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
This is your annual trek. This is when you come in. And
we need to meet more often.
You update us on where we're at. And the last time we were here, you left us very troubled, I have to say. I mean, for those who may have missed that conversation, and you want to be as troubled as I was at the end of it, you can go back and listen to Steve Boehmer talking about not a very rosy picture, certainly one in which some very, very tough questions remain. Is it fair to say that most of those questions have to do with who's going to pay for this? And how is it going to be paid for, and how is it going to be regulated, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've set the context up perfectly. People are living longer, healthier lives, which means the systems that were set up generations ago to care for the aging population didn't contemplate that we would care for the population aging for so long. And so there are all kinds of infrastructure problems associated with that. Mm-hmm. Where will people go when they need care? And certainly there's the financial component to that. It's not inexpensive to provide that level of care, and so who's going to pay for it? Throw on top of that the fact that Medicaid is a significant part of state budgets that almost every state is looking to control, and that folks, candidly, typically don't plan well for those later years financially. You've got a combustible kind of situation, and our members across Florida are working on how do we deliver the best possible care in the best possible environments in a way that people can afford to receive it?
My wife and I are both in our 60s. And anecdotally, I can tell you that among our friends who are in like manner our age, you know, 60, 70 years old, there is this sort of common conversation, ongoing conversation about there being no retirement for us. Mm. There is no point at which we decide we're not going to be trying to make a living any longer. Mm-hmm. Speaking to that point, that few of us have those kinds of resources that we could say, oh, well, we'll maintain the lifestyle we have. And that's the component right there, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to talk about scaling back, that may be affordable, maybe. But if you're going to stay where you are, yeah, well, no, you don't have the 401k. I can think of probably a dozen different guys that I've known or know in business in the last 15 years changed the landscape. Mm-hmm. One fellow said, you know, and he's my senior. He's 67. And he's out there every day pounding the pavement. And he's back in sales. And he said, I had no thought that I would be doing this now.
Mm-hmm. I think that's not how we envision it. But certainly the economic cycles, as you say, over the last 15 years or so have had a dramatic impact.
Well, and thank God that for those of us who find ourselves in that situation, that we're healthy enough.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to that question, here you go. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I talked earlier about changing expectations for us who want to maintain that lifestyle, but we just don't have the prowess. We don't have the physical ability to do that for ourselves any longer.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than simply going into a convalescent center, retirement home, mm-hmm. we're looking for alternatives that are more akin to, more like what we've become accustomed to, right?
Right, absolutely. In fact, you know, our members are focused on how do we deliver that more home-like environment. The expectations of the baby boomers is one of the biggest sets of challenges that long-term care providers face. Baby boomers are sort of changing the game in terms of what they expect, services they expect, the lifestyle, as you mentioned, that they expect. And so, you know, decades ago, and not very many, two decades ago, folks who had aged to a point where they needed assistance
right.
would go to a nursing home.
Right.
And that's increasingly not true. Folks are now moving into assisted living communities and that sort of thing, in part because that's where they'd prefer to be.
Right.
They want a more home-like environment, but also driven in part by the kinds of policy questions that you asked. Mm. If you're going to control Medicaid spending, then there's an incentive to keep people out of the most expensive setting, which is the nursing home setting. Mm.
Talking with Steve Bamer, he is the executive director for Leading Age Florida here in Tallahassee, representing managed care facilities all over the state. Mm. And we're going to get into some more of this with him. You stay with me.
Witten Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Witten Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Witten Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Witten's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Witten is known for taking care of business. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back talking with Steve Bamer, and I want to correct myself. When we talk about Leading Age Florida, you're talking about an association of facilities, organizations, businesses that provide long-term care.
That's right.
Right? I think I was saying managed care, which is really the insurance side of the business.
And we certainly interact with them, but our members are the providers of care.
Yeah, the providers of. And I think of some of those facilities that we see popping up all over town, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you back in here. I mean, is it just me, but we're seeing, I want to say in the last 2 years, maybe a dozen, and there are more on the way. One facility came in about a year and a half ago. They're already opening up their second location. And then I was over at this new in Clarity Point. They have a putting green. You talk about changing expectations, right? So, and you don't find the big lunchroom anymore. You don't find everybody kind of massed together. Now, they specialize in memory care, right? Well, interestingly enough, their recreational activities are all focused on maintaining or trying to enhance memory. And you can see it. They've got all these different kind of games and activities and so forth. That's an industry then that has responded very clearly and very quickly to this changing population. Again, our level of expectations. When you talk with your association members, the people who are on that side of providership, what are the things that they're shaking their heads about? I mean, are they saying that we can't keep up with that kind of expectation, that level of expectation at this, you know, at a price tag that people can afford? Is that an ongoing kind of conversation?
I think that's the challenge. You know, it's interesting, some of the expectations that have changed. 10 years ago, for example, nursing homes and assisted living communities probably weren't grappling with whether they had multiple different secure Wi-Fi networks that they could provide for residents. But now, baby boomers who are retiring into these environments expect Wi-Fi, for example. You made a great point about, we talk with my staff all of the time that, you know, this isn't your grandmother's nursing home or assisted living. The cafeteria-style lunchrooms are gone. You know, these providers now have restaurants and sometimes multiple restaurants inside the community because that's the expectation. So delivering that at a cost that is reasonable or affordable is a challenge. But that's exactly what our members are doing. And the couple that you mentioned earlier are members of ours here in Tallahassee.
Yeah. Providers then are those in this era that are private, right? These are not publicly funded facilities as such necessarily.
Right.
They might be.
Our members are primarily nonprofit private organizations. We have some for-profit providers, but we primarily represent not-for-profits.
And in that capacity, do they look to third-party funding in some way so they are able to do the business of supplementing what their fees would not be able to sustain? Because, again, they're dealing with consumers who are going to push back at some point and say, I can't afford that. So they have to go somewhere. Where do they go?
Well, so in the nursing home environment, that where is typically the Medicaid program. I think if you look across Florida, there are 682 nursing homes in Florida. Probably 65 to 70% of the residents in nursing homes are on Medicaid. By the time you've reached that level of need for intensive kind of care in a nursing home setting, you know, you've typically spent down your assets and you know, almost 3 out of 4 of those residents are on Medicaid. In the assisted living environment, it's much more heavily focused on private pay. And that's in part because of this policy shift that we talked about and the lifestyle expectations that we've talked about. The truth is people don't want to live in nursing homes, and we know that, and our members know that. So to the extent that they can receive the level of care they need in an assisted living environment, that's what they prefer and that's what they do. So they, you know, they're doing that earlier and staying longer, and it's typically a private pay kind of environment because you have the assets at that stage in your life typically to cover it. You talked a little bit about the explosion of assisted living, and it relates again to that lifestyle and policy kind of issue that we talked about. There are, as I said, about 682 nursing homes in Florida. There are over 3,000 assisted living facilities. So that gives you an idea of the scope.
So arguably 4 times roughly as many. And they're smaller facilities too, right? They're not the big hospital-looking kinds of things. These are single level many times. Not always, but many times. They're trying to go after that sort of country club look and feel. If government as such, and there's been this contest going on for a couple of decades, is in this tug of war, right, over big government, small government. People in my situation are going to say, well, yeah, I want the government to come in and underwrite as much of this as they possibly can. That flies in the face of my more conservative leanings because I'm not a big government guy. But that gets pushed a bit, doesn't it? When it now, oh boy, now it hits the road with me. I'm the person on the receiving end of that question. Do you find yourself in conversation with those members you have where they're talking to people at that level and they're saying, hey, you know what? The money just isn't here because state government, federal government is trying to pull back.
Sure. A big part of what we do for our members is legislative advocacy. And so we have members who, you know, our folks tend to be mission-driven, mission-oriented. So they're nonprofit providers. As they generate net proceeds, they put those back into the organization as opposed to paying dividends to stockholders. And so they're very focused on serving people. And they do that even when they lack the resources. So some of them have foundations. They have very generous donors who provide
additional
funding.
So they get creative real quick.
They have to. It's a great point. At the same time, they are very engaged in the legislative discussion because Medicaid is an important piece of that. And in Medicaid tends to be inadequate. The reimbursement that you get from Medicaid doesn't cover the cost of delivering the care. So in every circumstance where they're providing care to someone who's on Medicaid, they're losing money. And they supplement that through foundations and other ways. But,
which then again characterizes the breadth of the medical community, we'll say. I mean, medicine at large is faced with the same sort of questions that are applied here, right?
Sure.
You know, this is what you want. This is how much this third party is going to pay.
what else you got. It's either coming out of your pocket or your insurance company. And so there's this constant mash of who's going to have to pick up the majority of the cost.
That tension never goes away. And on the political question, the president of the Senate, Joe Negron, a Republican, has recently said that he is in favor of increasing Medicaid reimbursement for nursing homes, for example. So while that tension exists too and it never goes away, there's a real effort at the state legislative level to contain Medicaid spending because it's such a big portion of the budget. But at the same time, there's a recognition that these are the frailest, most vulnerable members of our of our population in our state, and that to the extent that the state has agreed to underwrite some of that cost, probably the state needs to do a little bit better job of it. So we're working on it.
I would imagine people in the business who, again, I mean, I might put myself in that same category and say, yeah, I like the idea that everybody kind of takes care of their own, and you know, let's not lean on government programs more than we ought to. But a moment like this, you think, what are you going to say to your mom or your family member who is indeed unable to provide? And so are you going to pick up the tab on that, or where are you going to go? It's interesting that it challenges what might be a otherwise sort of objective political stance.
Right.
You know, in theory, this is how it's supposed to work. Well, that theory gets challenged pretty quickly when you're faced with it personally. Where do you see us going? I mean, if you think about the next 5 years, please tell me that things are a lot rosier now than when you were here last.
Well,
just tell me what I want to hear.
I would tell you that we're making progress. It's slow. And in some ways that we haven't even begun to touch on today, we've made no progress since we talked last time. But I would say on the nursing home and assisted living, those more intensive levels of care, we have made progress. The continual push toward increasing options for assisted living is a good thing. It's less expensive for the state. It's less expensive for the folks who need that level of care. And there are blossoming options all across the state. So that's a good thing. On the nursing home side, we recently revamped the Medicaid reimbursement system for nursing homes, and we're continuing to work on that while we're getting support from Republicans in the legislature for increased Medicaid spending. So the recognition is there that Florida is the oldest state in the country, and it's getting older faster than anyone else. And our policymakers are I think, frankly, putting their money where their mouth is in terms of trying to help solve that problem.
So this is how Steve Boehmer spends his day, trying to sort through all of the numbers. Folks, I've got one more opportunity with Steve, so stay with me. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So I'm talking with Steve Boehmer about our aging Florida here. And you said earlier, the oldest state in the nation. And don't we feel it on a day when we've had temperatures in the 20s? My birdbath looked like a skating rink this morning. You're a young fella. You're certainly younger than I am. And when you think about your own personal, you know, forecast, are you worried?
At some level,
what worries you, I guess?
Yeah. At some level, I am worried. I don't know if I'm fortunate. I feel fortunate to be in the position I'm in and do the work I do, because it focuses me on the future in a way that I suspect I would otherwise not be focused. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. I'm in my mid-40s. That's a problem for people my age. Good Lord willing, we will all get old and eventually need some help. But most of us don't think about that as a reality. Mm-hmm. And so we aren't planning ahead. The work I do positions me to think about that all the time. So that's a blessing. On the other hand, it's expensive. I mean, we're talking average costs of $5,000 or $6,000 a month for assisted living care, for nursing home care. It can be more than that. Mm-hmm. So that worries me. The cost of receiving mm-hmm. that care is probably not going to go down.
In that respect, when we look at a program that is now, 70 years old or so, in which FDR said, okay, we're going to have this thing called Social Security, mm-hmm. and we're going to try to force you then to set aside money for your retirement.
Mm-hmm.
That seems terribly antiquated to me. It seems completely out of touch with what we were talking about, in that, you know, in the 40s, we didn't think that people were going to live as long.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't think that we were going to have the kinds of lifestyles that we have come to expect, not just enjoy, but as you say, we want, you know, our internet access, not just every day, but three times in three different ways.
Mm-hmm. Our putting greens and
we want our
pools.
Putting greens. We want all of this to happen for ourselves. So that begs the question, are we still working out of a model of provision, we'll say, economic provision, that it just doesn't work anymore?
Yeah, it's a great question. The idea of retiring on your Social Security doesn't even strike me as plausible.
It seems absurd.
Silly almost,
yeah,
to me.
Right.
And at my age, Social Security, I mean, I've obviously been trained to think that's not even going to matter when I'm 65. It's interesting, the retirement age 65 comes from Kaiser Wilhelm, and that was the life expectancy, so they never expected to pay anything after 65. So I think that the notion of Social Security is challenging. There are some public policy discussions at the national level that focus on mandatory long-term care insurance, automatic mandatory deductions from our paychecks, for example, to set up a fund to help pay for your retirement. Mm-hmm. It's similar to the Social Security idea. And the genesis of that concept is, we know that paying for care in our later years is expensive, and we know that people don't plan for it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't make it mandatory, people mm-hmm. won't plan for mm-hmm. it. So there are evolutions, I think, of the Social Security concept that are continuing to be talked about, but it's pretty tough to generate political support for a mandatory tax, if you will.
It seems to me, though, this model we've been working with may not be to our best advantage. And the model I'm talking about has to do with what otherwise might be considered a fractured familial world,
mm-hmm.
Where we are all, in many ways, operating independently of one another as individuals. Though we are family, mom lives in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
dad is gone, my two brothers are in Oklahoma, I'm down here in Tallahassee, let's say, and when mom needs help, I've got to get back to a kind of, oh, we need to take care of mom attitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're assuming for the moment that somehow we'll be able to pool our resources. I can't tell you how many families I talk to. That ain't happening.
Yeah.
There's no way.
It's interesting. I've done some reading on that very subject, and you've described the sociological challenge, or reality, I guess it is, mm-hmm. very well. I mean, suburbanization, separated families who used to live together in cities, and now somebody else has to care for the parent.
Right.
My own mother and father-in-law live in northern Wyoming, and when they need help,
guess what?
We have to do it exactly the way that you're describing. So.
And so then that challenges our concept of what is family. What are we going to look like in 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
Because the way you're describing it, these models we have in place, it's not sustainable.
Well, and that's why the work we're doing in the meantime focuses on what are the levers that we can move to try to help make it sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a natural tension, again, between the regulatory environment, the rules mm-hmm. that are in place to make sure providers provide the highest quality care possible, and the cost of providing that care under the weight of those rules.
So that says that you think, sitting here today, wait a minute, Brian, it's not completely unmanageable. It's not undoable,
mm-hmm.
but we do have to make some hard choices. Maybe it has to do with the allocation of resources.
Sure.
So then we're going to put more money as a culture, we'll say, societally, so that third-party funding really can make the difference.
I think that's part of it.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it. I also think that every dollar that a nursing home spends on an employee whose only job is compliance with a regulation book that is thicker. The nursing home industry is the most heavily regulated industry in the country. Nothing else is even, nuclear energy is not even close. So every dollar a nursing home spends paying someone whose only job is ensuring compliance mm-hmm. is a dollar they don't spend mm-hmm. providing care or offsetting the cost of care.
Right, right.
So that's what I mean. Part of our work is to take a look at this never-ending flourishing flurry of regulations and figure out what can we do about that.
Now, the people who would push back on that question, because that implies you're looking at the unintended consequences, negative consequences of regulation.
Sure.
They would look at you and go, yeah, but what about those people down in South Florida who died because the air conditioning system failed? And somehow that was Rick Scott's fault. I'm not sure why. I mean, maybe it was, but I don't know.
I don't think it was.
Rick didn't seem to think so. But they would look at you and go, and so you want to remove regulations that are going to put more of our moms and dads at risk?
So I would say I understand that feedback. Yeah. From our members' perspective, it's absolutely clear that resident safety is their number one priority. Always has been, always will be. And there are certainly regulations that are in place that are worthwhile and help ensure that. But there are hundreds of pages of regulations that don't really do anything to improve resident safety or the quality of resident care. And that's what we need to be talking about.
I see.
Our organization, for example, you know, we challenged the governor's emergency rule that required generators and fuel and that sort of thing. Not because we disagreed with the need for generators. We absolutely believe that's the right thing to do, and our members are doing it now. But because of the timeline. The 60 days was an impossible timeline to get that done. But our members universally and unanimously supported the idea that we live in a state where it gets hot. And if you're in the business of caring for seniors and you haven't invested appropriately so that you can care for them in that environment, you need to figure that out. You need to figure that out. Right.
Steve, thank you for that and for being a part of this show today. We hope that the next time we bring you here, we'll have even better news because you will have made more progress. So get back to work. On behalf of all of us here in the state of Florida, Steve Bamer, the executive director for Leading Age Florida, our guest this morning. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for the invitation.
Well, that's what I have for you today, my friend. Glad you've been with me on this occasion. You know, we are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment here in Tallahassee, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat Radio. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
July 9, 1755, near Fort Duquesne, now the city of Pittsburgh, a 23-year-old British officer leads his troops in battle during the French and Indian War. Though fired upon repeatedly, this young lieutenant colonel remains unharmed to the disbelief of the native warriors. 15 years later, a respected chief sat over a council fire with this same man. As he told all those listening, the Great Spirit protects this man and guides his destiny. He will become the chief of nations, and a people yet unborn will hail him as the founder of a mighty empire. The man was George Washington, who went on to become the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army and the first president of the United States.
Celebrating our nation's quest for freedom, Witt and Glass on South Monroe for mirrors, shower enclosures, and window glass, call 222-5781. And Sellers Tile on Capitol Circle Northeast for tile, carpet, hardwood, and luxury vinyl, call 656-8453.